The BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 719, recorded on April 5th, 2024.
Edition of the TV Gaming Podcast, the 552nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, we should put quotation marks around game news, because for the past week, 2 weeks, there really hasn't been any interesting game news. Especially since, you know, April 1st, I'm not going to go through all the stupid April Fool's jokes that everybody's making. They're just dull.
Well, Minecraft had an interesting poisonous potato update, which I thought was funny. They had a whole dimension made of potatoes, and you can have potato armor and make potato wands, and like some of the mobs had different potato skin textures, and it was a pretty interesting update, or, you know, just joke for April Fools.
All the online games had April Fools jokes, and it's all the same kind of crap.
The funniest thing I saw by far, and the most novel thing, Night Dive announced a rework of the weird classic shooter PO'd on April 1st, and everybody was like, haha, funny April Fools.
No, it's real.
The next day, Night Dive said, no, we're serious.
You know what, actually, that reminds me of the first really true great April Fools subversion, and that was when PopCap released the music video for There's a Zombie on Your Lawn for Plants vs. Zombies, and get ready to soil your plants. And it was released on April 1st, and guess what? Plants vs. Zombies was not an April Fool's joke. It was a real game, a real classic game now.
Yeah, so I like that little bit out of Night Dive. They can stay.
But no, it's dull. It's dull. 20 years of this, it's dull. It was funny, haha, 20 years ago, and now it's like, yeah, whatever. And the thing is that a lot of these April Fool's jokes, put the April Fool's jokes in quotation marks, are, it's just a joke, but if you really, really like it, we'll make it for real. Because there's a lot of April Fool's jokes that became things you could buy on ThinkGeek. So sometimes these April Fool's jokes are actually just marketing campaigns.
It does seem that way sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, there's very little news this week. So we're really going to get into talking about what we've been playing. But there are some quick news that actually popped up today, which were sort of interesting. The first of the quick news is Splinter Cell fans are getting excited about a possible update on the remake in June. Ubisoft Toronto may be teasing the next Splinter Cell game. Sam Fisher. Probably not Michael Ironside. Is he still alive?
I don't know. We'd have to look up.
I just remember him mostly from V.
And I think Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah, he was in that, too. Also, he was in RoboCop.
Was he in
Clarence Boddicker? No, he wasn't in Clarence. He was in Space Hunter, though, as the overdog. I thought you would let me go. I lied. Anyways, and I surprisingly don't care, even though I played the very first Splinter Cell on the original Xbox way back when everybody was stunned by the graphics, even for PC users. Graphics were stunning. Do you care about a Splinter Cell game anymore, TJ?
You know, if they put effort into it, like, I don't mind. I think Splinter Cell occupies a certain type of stealth action that we don't really have anymore. It's not like that Konami is pumping out Metal Gear Solid, and it's not like anyone else is kind of doing that tactical espionage style. And moreover, like, compared to what Metal Gear Solid was doing, Splinter Cell always felt like its more businessy cousin, where it was a little less flashy, a little less dramatic, a little less tons of women soldiers in skin suits, and more like actual, like, doing the Tom Clancy war games espionage.
The sniper who needed to wear as little as possible because she could only breathe through her skin.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
We don't have that. You don't get too much of that in Splinter Cell.
No, Michael Ironside would just shoot her.
and it went through some really interesting twists, like, as especially during the era where Sam like went rogue for a while. And actually, like, because that was a big part of the early Splinter Cell games, is that you couldn't deviate from the mission. If you did, you failed. And that included, like, collateral damage. And then, like, in Splinter Cell, where, like, he went off the grid, suddenly all the bets are off, no rules, get in there and, like, do what you need to do.
You know, Middle-Earth upped the game for everything. Monolith just does that. By the way, I had a realization that that Middle Earth Shadow of War came out 7 years ago and it's still better than any other open world action game I've played. Mm-hmm. That includes Horizon and that includes Spider-Man. It's just is so well ahead of its time, which is why I'm really, really, really looking forward to Wonder Woman, because that's going to be, you know, Middle Earth and the DC universe.
Yep. The next time we get to see the Nemesis system in action.
You never saw the Nemesis system in action, damn it. You never played the goddamn game.
So I can see it without having to play it. I can see it with my eyes.
It's you have to experience it, really.
I know. But come on, I can at least look at it.
But you know what? That'll segue into the other minor news item, is that before it became Shadow of Mordor, Middle-Earth, Monolith was making a Batman game using that project. Now, can you imagine that if they did get the go-ahead from WB and they made a Batman game with a Nemesis system?
That would be rad.
Yeah. But everything they did with – see, that's why Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor was so much like Arkham Horror. I mean, Arkham Horror is a board game. Arkham Asylum is that – yeah, it was – but the thing is, they didn't want to have two Batman games going at once. So they said, okay, Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings movies instead. And here's the thing. I went back to Shadow of Mordor, and it's like, it's stiff and clunky compared to Shadow of War, which is why I don't play Shadow of Mordor that much anymore. But I also 100%ed Shadow of War, with some really insanely difficult achievements that I managed to pull off. There's like 72 achievements that I got 100%ed on.
Yeah, and like, it's going to be fun to see what they've done with the Nemesis system since the last time, don't you think?
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Because it's been years since Shadow of War came out.
7 years. Here's the thing, though. How are you going to use the Nemesis system in a Wonder Woman game? Because the Nemesis system is basically villains, right? So I have to think that this is going to have to deal with the Greek underworld, and it's going to be Greek demons or something of that equivalent that she's going to deal with that start molding her to it. Because it can't be like, well, Cheetah is no nemesis. She was always a nemesis. How can you nemesis Cheetah? She can be a boss, but she's not. But the nemesis is something completely different. It'd be very odd to have humans start be the ones who are nemesis, you know, because it's Wonder Woman. But Monolith knows what it's doing. It has very, very, very few failures. So it's like, I want to see what they're able to do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Because, like, you're right. I don't know that system works in a not open world game.
No, this is going to be open world game. But how they implement it, and I have to believe there's going to be a type of enemy that's like an orc, but not an orc, in the Wonder Woman game. So that you can have nemesis, you know, people who modify themselves to face off against Wonder Woman have specific lines. Because what's funny is that in Shadow of War, there'll be different lines for if you hop on a Caragor and attack them, if you're still riding the Caragor, if you just killed a Caragor, if you just got off the Caragor, and other things. They will know exactly what you did. All these fine gradations. And also, you know, one thing I like about Monolith is that they're fantastic storytellers. I mean, Rocksteady just took a hit with Kill the Justice League. And man, oh man, is that getting drubbed for the past few weeks. And it isn't even that the gameplay is mediocre, which is sort of shocking because Rocksteady, you know, at least we thought they knew how to do action. I think they were pulled in several directions. But man, oh man, the story is just ass-tastic. I mean, I have never seen people get that angry over a story. And the funny thing is, I can understand their anger. Because it's so disrespectful to the DC mythos.
Yeah.
You know what I'm reminded of? I'm reminded of the Poochie episode in which Lewin says, we want it more edgy and more thing. And I think that's what Warner Brothers told Roxanne. We want to be edgy. Remember how great that Suicide film was in 2015? The first one? We want it like that.
Yeah, but then they threw in a whole bunch of stuff that people didn't want.
It's like, these people don't know how to read the room. They really don't.
It really is a shame, too, because from what I've heard, the story in between the horrible gameplay and inventory management and Suicide Squad isn't a bad experience. Like, people said they enjoyed what they saw in that game as far as the story went. Besides the people that were, like, confused at why a game called Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League has you killing the Justice League. But that aside, I heard people saying that the story was, like, legit fun to follow.
Really?
And then
did you actually play it? Did you actually watch the story?
No, I haven't. But
okay, then you're going to it. No, well, those people are wrong. Watch it for yourself, and your jaw will drop at how – and the way they kill Batman, they have some fucking nerve to say, oh, and by the way, Kevin Conroy, we love you. Yeah, it was a fucking middle finger to Kevin Conroy. It was a fucking middle finger. The game is just dreadful.
I don't know. I've watched that scene. Wasn't the point – like Harley said, it always should have been me if it was going to be anybody.
No. Watch the entire game. You'll see. It is just tremendously bad and completely tone deaf. It is absolutely fucking tone deaf.
Hmm.
Anyways, and the reader goes, well, actually, they were clones because it's Brainiac and all that stuff. Whatever. And then they have the fucking nerve to say, okay, you killed Brainiac, but guess what? There's 7 more Brainiacs. So help you like live service. Fuck you. You're not even getting past the second one. That game's going to die on the vine really, really fast.
Hmm.
Yeah, you have to kill 7 more Brainiacs. Get your wallet out. What? What were you going to say, Scott?
Oh, no. I haven't played that game. And
don't.
I guess I was just never really interested in the idea of the Suicide Squad. I just not interested.
I mean, they have dick jokes. Anyway, never mind. They just have dick jokes in that game. Something that TJ may be more in tune in. Eddie Gordo joins Tekken 8. So tell us about Eddie Gordo, TJ.
He's the capoeira expert from Brazil. Like, this character has been in the Tekken series since the first game, and he's widely considered to be one of the hardest to play and the hardest to master, but one of the most rewarding because he's ridiculously hard to play against as well in the hands of somebody that knows him. Lots of dance moves, lots of flipping around and shifting from hands to feet.
God, it's not one of those drunk master type of move sets, is it?
It's similar because he has a lot of swaying and a lot of like getting off of his feet onto his hands.
Yeah, I never liked playing against drunken master types.
And like using breakdance fighting, capoeira, obviously, but just he's very flowy. He's very hard to hit. And he's very hard to counter because of how much he moves and shifts styles. I'm excited to see this guy in the game because he should have probably been in the main roster. But that issue has been cleared up now. They need to fix Tekken 8 right now because the update that they just did, they did a thing where they fiddled with the physics when you do a combo on somebody at the wall. And it was meant to keep certain moves from whiffing when you hit somebody to the wall and then try to rage art, which is like a super for every character in the game. But in doing that, they made other combos that used to work at the wall not work. And you know what pisses people off more than making their combos not work? Nothing. Everybody hates that. Everybody in the world hates that when they come into a new update and find that the moves and combos and strings that they were working on and practiced in the lab ad nauseum, suddenly those tricks don't work anymore. So Tekken has addressed the issue. They're going to be moving on a patch soon. And I hope that patch comes out fast because that kind of sucks that they broke some game plans just by making a small tweak. And I mean, it's got to be some growing pains of them moving over to a new engine, because again, this game was built from the ground up in Unreal Engine 5. Like, Bandai Namco has never messed with this engine before. This is the first time. And as easy as it is, it points out some things that, like, it's not easy to build the game that you have for a long time in an entirely new engine.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Some engines are not meant for certain things. Like, we all know about EA wanting to go with the Frostbite engine and how much of a disaster that was. Because it was not meant to do RPGs, and it was not meant to do, you know, everything. It was really basically only meant for online shooters, right? So, I mean, Unreal Engine obviously is a lot more flexible, but, you know, sometimes it isn't meant for it, and you really have to work to get it right for a certain type of genre.
Yeah, and this is one of those cases where, like, they made a small tweak to physics, and doing so, they just... A lot of things got broken in the process, so I don't know if that ends up being an entire rollback while they look for a new solution to the original problem, or if they just try something new to make it all work again, which sounds like it would be a much more exhaustive process. Either way, Tekken 8, not in a great state, but they should be getting a patch on this soon, so hopefully I'll be able to enjoy Eddie myself, because I've taken a break from the game until they fix that.
You know, speaking of Unreal Engine 5, there's been early reports about Hellblade 2 being absolutely fantastic. And, you know, they had the little thing, and it's like, you know, it's going to be really, really good looking, but it's only going to be 30 frames per second. And people say, I'm not going to play. Well, I hope you're not going to play Grand Theft Auto 6. I hope you're not planning to play that, because that's going to be 30 frames per second. You know, and even if you own the PS5 Pro, it's only going to be 30 frames per second. And it's not going to be on PC, so.
Yeah, like, in fact, there have been a few games recently where, like, there have been 30 frames per second on it, and nobody really batted an eye. Dragon's Dogma 2 is one of those games where, like, it's been a technical mess, and that game only runs at 30 frames per second. But you don't really see people going crazy or ranting about how the frames aren't working. Really, it's more like the technical issues on PC.
I only worry if the frames go into single digits. That's when I get upset.
And, like, there's a few other games, too. Like, Starfield ran at 30 frames per second. I didn't really hear too many people complain too much about that, right?
Well, they complain about Starfield for the least reasons.
I don't get the obsession over the frames per second that constantly comes up every time a video game comes out. It's like, is this going to run at 60? And it's like, Just play the game.
Don't well, here's the thing. It. If it's a single-player game, I don't fucking care if it's not at 60 frames per second. Okay? I'm not aiming my gun at someone else in a shooter. I don't care. You know, if you want, you know what you could do if you're really concerned about frames per second? Just put it on the lowest resolution and play online and just shut up. I don't care if Counter-Strike 2 goes at 120 frames per second, because I'm not playing that game.
Yeah, I mean, if Tekken or Guilty Gear ran at 30 frames per second, I would not be as cool with that. But again, you're right. This is a single-player experience. It's meant to convey, like, a whole, like, presentation of events. And really, there's – if part of that ends up being 30 frames per second, there are people out there that care, but I think those people are a little bit ridiculous as well.
But what they are saying about it is that it looks absolutely amazing. And we shouldn't be surprised, because this is Ninja Theory, and we saw what they did with the first Hellblade, and all of their other games always look fantastic. They know how to run things in an engine.
There was one thing about seeing the Hellblade previews come out. Let me pull this up here. The co-founder of the company, who's been the director on most of their games, Tanim Antoniadis, he left Ninja Theory. And, like, they didn't really even announce it. The only way anyone knows is because Polygon asked about him, because he wasn't really anywhere during the preview that they did. And then an Xbox spokesperson said he left the company and the project near the beginning of Hellblade 2's development. I find that strange that, like, no one announced that. Nothing was announced about it. And
why would anybody need to announce it?
Because it's a co-founder and a director leaving the company after 24 years.
It was no controversy, so whatever. It's not like Rei Mizuki leaving BioWare because of problems with EA, you know?
Yeah, but this guy also, like, was the director on the first Hellblade. He was the director on DMC.
I think the fact is that it's Ninja Theory and not Bungie, and it's not anybody, you know, you know, it's not like Kojima leaving, you know, Konami Kayami leaving Grasshopper.
Yeah, I guess I just hope it's not a sign of any sort of red flags for Ninja Theory, because I would love to see this game do well. It's so impressive.
They also said it was going to be 8 hours, which I don't have a problem with. It's a story. It's a single-player story. As a matter of fact, the first game was almost a visual novel in my eyes, because it wasn't really all that challenging. You know, you did some things, you had to align your things, you look at the pretty things, and then you fight, and yeah, there was permadeath, but I think they just added it in, because if there wasn't permadeath, it would be super easy.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this turns out. I'm hopeful for it, because it looks just amazing.
It was somebody just left Square Enix, I think, who was on the Dragon's Quest team. I'm trying to find the article of who it was. But they had just met them. Find where it is now.
It's Yu Miyake, by the way, if you're thinking of that. He stepped down because Dragon Quest XII is taking way too long.
Yeah, I know. They announced it, like, I think back in 2017 or 20, it must have been 2020, and I know that that's been a long development time, and they came out.
Oh, they announced the game, yeah, because he was fired today.
Okay. Well, I mean, but that was.
Well, like, you stepped down. He didn't.
What TJ is like referencing is that they made an announcement of this, you know, because I guess the game. I don't know.
So
it doesn't look good for the game, I think.
No, actually, I think TJ will be really pleased because the person who's being considered to take over the production is Yosuke Sato, who TJ would recognize as the producer of Nier.
No, I know. But, like, the point I was making is that studios do often announce their leadership changes all the time. Yeah. Like,
you want
to
hear
it? That's what I was trying to support TJ with.
Enough of that news to know that it's appreciate everything he did and thank him for all his hard work.
These are companies that people actually care about. I mean, Dragon Quest is a holiday in Japan. When the new Dragon Quest comes out, everything stops. You want to hear a real – listen to this. This is going to say, ouch. You know what? Miyake was transitioned over. He was sent to their smartphone games department. Wow, that's a real. Yeah, we want you doing our smartphone games now.
I wonder when we're gonna see Dragon Quest XII.
Not for a while,
really,
because
don't know.
It was announced in 2021, and it was supposed to come out this year, and it keeps on getting delayed and delayed and delayed, and that's why Yu Miyake is now doing Android games.
Well, it can't help that Akira Toriyama and the original composer of the series are dead.
Yeah.
Not to be a downer, but like the amount of sheer talent behind the Dragon Quest franchise is amazing.
Yeah. Next week, Fallout launches the TV series on April 11th. They're going to release all 8 episodes, and I'm in the 8th episode, so look out for me.
I was about to joke. I know someone on that show.
Yeah. We'll see how much of my performance they retained. I know I'm probably still going to have the death glare at the main character. And I said this before. I'm going to talk about it again. They had the set in Queens. Most of it was shot in L.A. But they did some shooting in Queens. And by God, the set was like I stepped into a Fallout game. I swear it was so detailed and so accurate to the games. I felt like, yeah, I'm in a Fallout-themed amusement park because everything is there. All the fake ads, all the houses, it's like I stepped into Megaton.
The trailer did look really good.
I don't know how good it's going to be. I mean, I was also part of the raid, and we get to the MacGuffin, and we turn on the MacGuffin that heals L.A. or something like that. I'm not quite sure. It's like, what was the name of that? The Eden device? Was it called the Eden device in the first Fallouts?
I remember that. Yeah, Eden device.
I don't know if it was the Eden device. I forgot what it was called. But I know it's supposed to be something that...
I know what you're talking about. It does sound familiar, yeah.
No, the Gek. The Gek. The Garden of Eden creation kit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so maybe it was the LA version of the Gek. I don't know. Besides, I wouldn't spoil anything anyway. But here's the thing I don't like, is that they're releasing all 8 episodes on one day. I mean, do some appointment television, damn it.
Yeah.
Do some appointment television.
It could be like Invincible, where they released half the episodes and then took a break and then released half the episodes later.
No, they're releasing all eight episodes of season one. But you know what? If they have a season two, I'll see if I can be in it again. Because it was really fun doing that show. It was really, really fun because, like I said, I was a high command. I was the second, just under the top commander of the Brotherhood of Steel. And man, I loved wearing that outfit. I got my own gun, my own giant pistol. You know how those pistols are. They're these giant round pistols. I got one of those. And we had the people in power armor walking around with their giant chain guns. It was hilarious.
Nice.
Yep. I didn't see any vault dwellers. I didn't see. No, my thing was is only with the Brotherhood of Steel, which is going to be a B plot in the show, I believe. I didn't see any ghouls. Although I can do a ghoul voice.
I know in the trailer there was a ghoul with a cowboy hat and he had that line.
Oh, no, they have the ferals too. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have everything in the thing, but the thing is that I'm looking forward to – so the actor – I dealt with the actor, the black lead actor. I forgot his name because he goes through this entire thing in which he's disgraced and everybody hates him. And I'm one of the people who hates him. And then we skip forward and we're now, what's it called, honoring him because he did the big thing and he did it by himself. And we all, what's it called, we have this candlelight vigil, what's it called, praising him and all that stuff. I love the fact that the one scene I'm in, the elder just tosses down a head at him. It's like.
That's interesting because the trailer didn't show a main male actor, just a main female actor.
No, it's a young African-American actor who plays a Brotherhood of Steel. I forgot his name.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be interesting. If you see the advertisements for him, you'll see the ghoul in the cowboy hat and the girl, and he'll be there in his power armor. What's funny is they had to get some cosplayers to bring their power armor as background, you know, people far back, so you really can't see them, so that their shittier costumes don't exactly stand out. But I can tell there's going to be CGI, but a lot of it is going to be practical. A lot of it is going to be practical, including the set. If you're tired of the Star Wars sets that you can tell is just a round green screen, you're not going to have it in Fallout. All practical sets.
Well, Amazon can pay for that, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I'm hoping it's a hit so that there's a season two and I can be in it. Yeah, it's awesome. I'll probably watch it and try and see if there's a way to tape myself so that I can, you know, get it for my demo reel.
Nice.
So I guess you're going to watch it, Scott.
Yeah, we have Amazon, so we'll check it out. My wife wants to see it, too.
Yeah, just tell him, hey, look, last episode, see if you can spot my friend. Just so you know, I have a big old beard, a real beard, too. It's not a fake beard. Actually, I think I have pictures of myself. I'm going to send them of me, what's it called, both in my outfit and also after they put all the makeup on me. So I have scratches and wounds and cuts and all that stuff and a black eye. It's hilarious. I love having 3D makeup put on me. Yeah, it was a blast doing it. It was like I was actually getting to play a Fallout game in person. See, here's the thing. That set was so good. I was thinking, you know, maybe they can make a Fallout world, you know, make a small amusement park. That's all Fallout. I think people would rather do that than do the fucking Star Wars experience.
Yeah, that Star Wars experience is really expensive. It's crazy.
And it's also dull as hell. And if you're doing Fallout, you know, you don't have to really get into that much because it's, you know, it's not nothing ever doing lightsabers. No, it's just guns and post-apocalyptic.
Nice. Like the whole thing has looked pretty great. The trailers have looked good. If anything approached you too fast, did you try to like mash the VATS button?
No.
That slowed down time.
No, I didn't. No. No, I mean, it was just like I was, what's it called? It was just fun. I was leading in the charge and the, with the, I was leading, helping lead the charge because I was one of the commanders and was like, the guy, the Brother of Steel and their power suits are behind me, you know, and it's sort of like we were all just, we were at the MacGuffin. It's like so good. And I, like I said, it was also freezing all the shoot. I didn't mind at all. I was like immune to the, because I was having so much fun. And I didn't even know I was going to be in it because the code name for the show was Hondo. So, and this, oh, this is, I just did another movie. Its code name is Shotgun Wedding. It's actually The Bride! Exclamation point. And it's The Bride of Frankenstein in 1930s Chicago. Yep. And it's directed, written, and produced by Maggie Gyllenhaal. So. But she's not in it, though. She's writing, directing, producing, but not starring. It's with Christian Bale, I think. And Annette Bening. And some newer actresses who you probably know, I don't. You can look it up on IMDb anyway, The Bride 2025. No spoilers because I didn't really reveal anything except all the public information. So, but yeah, it's like I'm having fun. I just need to make money now. So has anything happened this week that's piqued either of your attention?
Well, just that, like I said, the Dragon's Quest story. But there was something else. Let's see.
How about you, TJ? While Scott is looking it up.
Pulling it out. That story with Hellblade was one of the biggest things. Was one of the big things I wanted to talk about, only because it was related to what we were already talking about at the time.
There, I do have a story that Junko Kwano has taken over Rabbit and Bear after Murayama's passing, and that they plan to continue to do games even after Iudian.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Rabbit and Bear are the ones who are doing Iudian Chronicles 100 Heroes.
Yeah, and that game is coming out in about like 2 weeks, or a little bit over 2 weeks, very soon.
So, DJ, you actually ran a story about System Shock bringing a new female protagonist and a new ending. It's going to be coming next week.
Yeah, that's going to be the update 1.2 for a System Shock remake, which is going to bring a revamped ending to the game. And give you a choice of whether you want to play as a male or female hacker at the beginning, which that's cool. Like, this was something that, as far as...
Uh-oh, there goes TJ.
Was it male or female in the original?
No, it was only male.
Okay.
Both characters were both male. The hacker and the soldier. The soldier has one line in System Shock 2. He has one line. Nah. But it is the most badass nah that you'll ever hear. It's basically a middle finger to Shodan. Have you played System Shock 2?
I have not played the second one yet because I assume that at some point we're going to see a full-on remaster of it out of Night Dive, given
now.
The success of the first one.
The other thing that was just like... It was something small, but it like exploded around Twitter, and that's Xbox posted their Hollow Knight Silk Song page, which allowed people to wishlist it and also reminded people, hey, it's going to be on Game Pass. There are so many people who just demand Silk Song. It is like it's like beyond Pokemon or Dragon Quest. It's like just people are so obsessed with Silk Song and just want Silk Song. It's like. I don't know. Was Hollow Knight really that good that people are just demanding Silk Song?
I think part of it is because it was a promised DLC that expanded into a full game, and there's just a lot of expectation for it, and it's built up and built up, kind of like Half-Life 3 jokes. So, you know, now people make jokes about the Silk Song not existing, and it's just... snowballed into this now, and but I don't know, we'll have to wait and see if it actually ever comes to light.
Yeah, perhaps the biggest thing right now is we're gonna probably hopefully get net neutrality back, Because that guy, Ajit Pai, was so shady. They proved that his polls, his petitions were fake. They were so blatantly fake.
That was a complete lobbied shill that was there specifically to work for the companies to make it as profitable for them as possible. And, like, shamelessly so. A guy dressed up in a Santa Claus costume with a Nerf gun in his hand and told everybody about how bad net neutrality is for making everybody have to play on the same page. It's so mean. What's up with all these consumer protections? Ajit Pai is a piece of shit. I'm going to go ahead and say that. And the internet is worse off because of him.
You know, thank God for people like Google and Netflix and all these other big companies which said, wait a minute, that's going to suck for us if people are able to dictate what we can or cannot show. And it's like if I remember correctly, they did have a day of silence, a few of them, just to prove a point, just like Twitch, some people do on Twitch. So we haven't gotten the worst of it. You know, it's just right now broadband is so fucking expensive for a lot of people. So, yeah. Yep.
And without net neutrality protections in place, there's nothing to stop a company from throttling you or deciding what you do or do not get to see or anything like that. Like, it's basically, it privatizes internet to the point where, like, the companies can just decide whatever, how they want to screw you and when.
Yeah.
That's what net neutrality was keeping us away from.
Thankfully, you know, Spectrum never took advantage of it. I've never been throttled, so that's at least the one good thing. Also, yeah. You know, another thing I also noticed is that T-Mobile used to have these tiers, and now it's sort of like, yeah. I mean, I never run out of data anymore, even though I supposedly have a 2 gigabyte or some data. I don't know if it's terabyte, gigabyte, whatever. I'm supposed to have a data cap, but I never surpass it. It's like something's going on here. So. Yeah. I guess we're lucky that no one actually took advantage of it, because I'm going to tell you something. If they did, it would have been real bad PR, real bad. Sort of like close up your shop and go home because no one's going to use you anymore. Bad.
Yeah, but net neutrality protections are important, and it's good to see that they're going to work towards reinstating them. I hope that vote goes well because it's desperately needed. Yeah.
Actually, there was another. Now that you're mentioning all this, there's a movement for the crew, apparently.
Yes, we're going to be talking about that in a moment. So if we move into game news, that's the other thing. Our one real big news item, because it's the last second thing. Gamers seek legal win that would stop developers from rendering online games unplayable. This comes from PC Gamer. Ubisoft pulled a plug on the crew this month, rendering the 10-year-old racing game unplayable due to, it said, to server infrastructure and licensing constraints. It's hardly the first time an online game has been sent to the farm upstate by a publisher that neither wants to... Wait, are they doing a Fables reference? You know Fables, right? I mean, you've played The Wolf Among Us,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
So
yeah.
What happens is that the animal characters get sent to the farm upstate because they can't afford a glamour. YouTubers Ross Scott is putting up a fight. With the crew as its prime example, the campaign directs consumers from around the world to sign petitions and submit complaints to regulatory bodies such as the DGCCRF, France's Consumer Protection Agency, and also one of the longest non-visible acronyms you could ask for. What do they call it? The GRF. Since it's French. The GRF. Anyways, the legal argument is that video games are goods rather than services, regardless of the terminology that game publishers may use, and goods should not be rendered inoperable by the seller after we buy them. The most obvious legal defense for publishers is that when we buy games digitally these days, we're actually buying a conditional license to play the game, with the main conditioning that the license can be revoked for any reason. Steam's subscriber agreement is explicit about this, saying that the games we buy are, quote-unquote, licensed, not sold, but if put in front of judges, those agreements won't necessarily hold up in every country, argues Scott. It'll be hard to get a favorable judgment in the U.S., but hope the campaign that if in one country, such as France, decides that publishers have to find a way to keep their games playable indefinitely... These people adopt new practices globally. Scott isn't asking developers to operate game servers under the heat of death of the universe, suggesting a compromise when a developer has decided to stop supporting a game and should furnish owners with some way of keep playing. That'd be private server support, with the understanding that some features may be lost in translation. We already know that with City of Heroes, in which NCSoft gave them the official license to run it, and it's been still going as we talk. Velen Students Director of Marketing Josh Harrison urged developers to make a plan for the inevitable day they stop supporting their online games, said the best thing they can do is give players private servers, as Velen did when it ended support for its competitive dodgeball game, Knockout City. It's been a while since I last heard about that game. Do you remember Knockout City? Mm-hmm.
Yes, of course. I loved that game.
Well, you can still love the game, apparently. So Knockout City was closed, like, 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Or something like that?
I thought they shut it down a while back.
There's new recent news about it, though. Oh, no, he's just... it's just from GDC 2 weeks ago that he was talking about this. The Stop Killing Games campaign has a mixed success so far, Scott told PC Gamer. He sees lots of complaint about the crew being filed, estimated from the emails received, but he's been frustrated by the slow process of getting government petitions approved. None of them are opening for signing yet, despite being submitted 3 weeks in advance of the campaign's launch. He's optimistic at least one of the department of the French government will examine the legality, and also Germany and Australia. Everything else is up in the air for the moment. You know, here's the thing is that if one country does it, that sort of does a dominoes, because what are you going to do? You're going to have one set of rules for one country and not do it for all the other countries, because that's going to – you're still going to have to keep the – you still have to keep the servers open or have an agreement with people in that country. So it's sort of like if one country doesn't, then, you know, a lot of dominoes will have to fall, you know?
Yeah. Otherwise, you risk end up not being able to sell your game next time you make one in an entire country, and that's not – that's not something that publishers want.
Yeah, I'm glad this movement is happening. I think for a long time I've been wanting some sort of digital rights for these games, because I want to protect stuff like my Steam library, for instance. You know, it's so this is just like one place to start.
And here's the thing, especially with online games, if people think they may not be able to play it, they're not going to buy it. You know, a live service game comes, they say, well, it's not Fortnite, and I know it's probably going to die in about a year, so why should I bother, you know, playing it or even spending a penny on it?
Yeah, like Rumbleverse. Rumbleverse was the wrestling battle royale. I loved that game. It was amazing. I wanted it to stick around forever because I was having such a good time with it. And then they were like, nah, we don't have the support for it, so we're going to go ahead and end up stopping new work on this game next month. The servers will be up until so long, and then we're closing them down.
You know what this reminds me of? You know what this... I completely lost my train of thought there. You know what it reminds me of? When a popular animated show like Young Justice gets canceled, not because there's a lack of viewership, but because people aren't buying the toys.
It's a damn shame. And Rumbleverse deserved better. That game was really good. It was probably one of my favorite battle royales that has ever happened. I know Iron Galaxy is now... I think Iron Galaxy is back to working on Killer Instinct with the updates for it. And I understand. That's like a big deal. But I wish that Rumbleverse didn't have to die for it.
Yeah, it's... I mean, here's the thing. People aren't going to care about what Iron Galaxy does with Killer Instinct unless it's Season 3. You know?
I don't know, because people were pretty excited at EVO 2023 when that guy came out and announced that they were doing more Killer Instinct.
Yeah, because they assumed he was going to do Season 3. They want Season 3. They want new fighters.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they want. They want new fighters. They want new arenas. Because the thing about Season 2, about Killer Instinct, which you may not know, is that it added gameplay mechanics that Season 1 was not equipped to handle. So not only did they have these new characters, they had new gameplay mechanics, and they had to retroactively fit it to the Season 1 character, so there was no imbalance. Can you imagine how difficult that is, to have all new gameplay mechanics with specific, character-specific gameplay mechanics, and make sure that it worked with the old one and the new one. It was different enough that they remained unique. So they really did a lot.
I don't have to imagine it. I was there when Ball broke the game for a while. It's been through some times. And, I mean, Killer Instinct is still awesome, but there was definitely some growing pains as they moved between seasons. especially if they move between developers, because people might not remember, but Iron Galaxy wasn't always on the game.
Yeah, Iron Galaxy actually had a bad reputation before that. Sort of like with Rockstar having a bad reputation when they did that the one game before they hit it big that was really terrible. I'm trying to remember what it was. It doesn't matter. But yeah, getting back to rights, so let's hope, you know. I hate to have to buy Alpha Protocol for a fifth time from from Good Old Games just so I can play it.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? Because, like, of all the licensing that went on with that game, it just disappeared. It was
didn't disappear. It just doesn't work.
Right. And it's good to finally see it back in a reasonable place, but that was a long time between when it wasn't when it didn't work and now that we finally have it again. Like, it sucks to see that stuff happen. It really does.
Anyways, we're going to move on to our final thing. What have you been playing? And you can go into detail if you want. TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing the bejesus out of Dragon's Dogma 2.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Bellatro.
But I made my character. He's a mountain of a man. And then I made a little thief to go along with him.
Oh, wait. Do you still have the companion thing in which you can send your companions off to other people's game?
Uh-huh. And you can hire the pawns from other people's games into your game. That came in handy because one of my favorite things that I learned about Dragon's Dogma 2 is that if something is smaller than you, you can pick it up and throw it. And that includes rocks, barrels, goblins, people, and basically anything that's less than your size. I love the idea that I can beat a goblin over the head and daze him and then pick him up and chuck him at his friends so hard it kills them both.
That does sound really fun.
There is also a special quality to water in that game. If you go into water that's more than like waist deep, there is a force underneath the water that is like Cthulhu. It'll like destroy you and pull you under and kill you. And that goes for not only you, but everyone else.
Wait, so he has Raz's curse, huh?
Yeah. And so I call it the Pirates of Dark Water. But so you can like you can just straight up chuck monsters into the drink and they'll get destroyed by it. I love that game. I love throwing things in that game. I also love just like the it's almost like a sandbox fantasy fiction, that game, because at any point in the world, things can happen where like you can get attacked by giant monsters or they'll just show up or other things will happen. Like there was a clip of somebody traveling in an ox cart, which is how you kind of like fast travel between towns in that game. And they thought they were safe, but in the middle of their trip, a griffin just fell out of the air and smashed the ox cart to pieces, and then they were in a fight. And I had my own experience where, like, I was hanging out in town, buying some stuff, upgrading my weapons, putting things away, and I hear a roar, and I look to the sky. I don't see a griffin. I look around for a while, and there's just an ogre inside of the front gate, running into the market and punching NPCs and quest givers. And it was that game is so ridiculous with how it allows things to happen. And I love that about it, because like I wouldn't say that the story or the narrative are all that interesting. It's the emergence of ridiculous events that make it like crazy fun.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
I have been playing Terra Memoria that came out this, like, I think March 27th. And it's a turn-based game in which you are a party of three mages and then three support characters. And there is no mana, no MP. You cast, and you're all casting spells. And the way the cost is, how long it takes you on the turn timer. And I really like this mechanic because it makes the turn timer feel like more of a part of the combat than like an abstract thing on the side that you can almost forget about. And you actually see, like, you'll have the monster on the timeline, and your character, when it goes, it says, like, it's 10 tiles away, it'll jump and hit the monster on the timeline and then go to the next tile. So, you know, it just helps incorporate that more, and that's, like, really a lot of fun. And again, it's a turn-based combat, and you are using spells, and you can have support characters that can either make your spell be single target or multiple target, can change your elements, and with the other, and the other character can convert your spells into healing spells. So there's a lot of flexibility there that you could change around. And the characters are all like humanoid, not non-humans. You have this big rhinoceros character called Mosheng, who wants to be a mage, but like he's just born this really big guy, and everybody's like, oh, why don't you go lift this thing or go mining or do labor? And he's like, no, I want to cast spells. And it's interesting to see him have to deal with that. So I'm enjoying that story. And then there's a fox called Syl, who is like, she's inherited the family summoning spells, where she summons a spirit, but she's lost it, and now she's looking for it. And then there's this the whole world is reliant on these crystals for powering supply, but there's like a crystal shortage, so you're going and investigating that and seeing what that's about. And there's also a town building mechanic at some point where you get to build housing and job buildings for people. So yeah, it's a lot of fun so far with this game.
Cool. So I'm not gonna go into too much what I've been playing, because I've been playing MLB The Show. I'll talk more about that another time, because I'm still getting used to various functions in it. I will say I bought City Skylines 2, even though it's Game Pass, because they had some expansions. I decided I was just gonna get the entire thing. So I bought the expensive version, because I've been having so much fun with it. I managed to start getting skyscraper office buildings, but skyscraper residential buildings. You know, these 50-story tall buildings. So city is level 10, and once again, I'm going to start over. They do now have the editor and mod support. Both are in beta, and I don't know. I'm not really getting in with the map editor. A lot of it is too arcane. I'll wait until they simplify it a bit, you know. But I'm starting to get a lot more of the mechanics. And you really haven't delved into it much, have you, TJ?
No, not too much.
Yeah. Once you start getting into it, you're going to start finding yourself, you know. Because I've gotten to level the 10th level city, and now I'm just going to restart. It is so good, you know, and people keep on bitching about it. The developers are suck. That's fine. It's great. It's a great game. I love what Colossal has been doing with it. And, I just want an easier map editor so that I can create a better map. That's about it.
That was a game where they whined and moaned about 30 frames per second. And it's like, have you seen how many moving parts are in that game? Of course it doesn't run at 60 frames per second.
That is going to help you either. It's not an action game. What are you going to do? Yeah.
When you're sitting far out from your city, or even when you're down on the ground, it's still kind of breathtaking to see everything in motion and working.
Oh, one of the things I love to do is when I set up my bus lines, I follow the bus during its entire route.
Oh, that sounds relaxing.
Yeah. I put it on normal speed, and because normally it's on fastest speed, but when I get into the bus, it's on normal speed, so that, you know, you can see people getting on, getting off. The funniest thing is, pets apparently don't count towards the capacity, so you'll have 75 people on a bus and 23 pets. And I'm thinking, God, that must be a zoo. There's 23 dogs and 75 people in that bus right now. Help. I would get off the bus immediately.
Yeah.
But one of the amazing things is, here's the thing, is that if you follow a person, you'll be amazed at how intelligent their movement is. You know, they have places to go and places to be, you know, and I think every single person is being tracked, and that's not including the people who are just passing by on the freeway, you know?
Yeah.
One of the funny things, and I realized how amazing it was that for the first time I started doing oil. So my industrial place is like away from it. So I decided, you know, I'm just going to put an industrial place here. And you know what happened? Nothing but oil industry popped up around it. All these tanks and all that stuff. Because guess what? That was the shortest way to go to get your oil refined. It's like, It's like everything is happening logically. You know, the stuff that you build, it's going to be, you know, it's going to have an effect. You know, a lot of city simulations can say that, but this one, no, it smartly does it.
Yeah, it's a lot of that game is like you can attribute to it smartly does it. That's a thing that you should put on the box of Cities Skylines 2, because okay. It is like that kind of game from top to bottom.
There is one thing that it does not smartly do, and that is I hate having to delete road to build to replace the road with different road. Why can't I just click and upgrade it? And I don't care if buildings get knocked. I just want to be able to, you know, that's something I'm pretty sure people have been demanding. So we'll see. I'm pretty sure it's going to be in a future patch. Yeah, we're going to let you.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's a sim. In real life, you don't just destroy a road to make a new road. They usually reconcrete it and widen it or build new roads that are happening right next to it as that first road is still open. And I don't know. That's like that doesn't seem unreasonable. I still think it's an amazing game.
It is an amazing game.
I'm right there with you. Like, I haven't gotten into it as much as I want to because I've been trying to. I have other priorities right now that I'm trying to get through. But man, every second I spend in that game, I'm just constantly floored by how much it took any criticisms that they had about the first game, took the mods that were some of the best stuff that people put together for that first game, and built it into a good and proper sequel.
Yeah. So one of the first expansion pass thing has been waterfronts, which is good because there's some buildings it'll say, it's underwater. So why did you start building there then, damn it?
Yeah.
It's like, why did you start building if you're going to be underwater?
But now we get to have beachfront properties. We get to have lake house properties. We get to have all sorts of – like you can set waterfront residential now, and that's kind of cool because the buildings will be different. They'll be beach themed. They'll be waterfront themed. They'll be lake house themed, and I love that. It's a fun bit of variety.
Yep. It is a game I'm – and the other game I'm going to talk about is Balatro. And here's the thing. I think me getting, you know, over 2 million on that one run, you know, my highest thing was 2.2 million. I haven't been able to get anything close to that. And I've been, you know, I've been unlocking a lot of jokers. I unlocked all of the suit related jokers. And I realized quickly the one that I need is I'll play on the checkerboard deck, which is hearts and spades only. So you have 26 hearts, 26 spades. Get the special the multiplier for hearts, and get the special multiplier that you have to unlock for hearts, which is one out of every four you might add a +2 modifier with a heart card. So I figured it out. What I also need is that joker that increases by one. So it's like if something's 1-3 chance, now it's 2-3 chance. So that's what I want, you know, like a 2-4 chance now. And then I need to get back that thing which cycles through suits. You know, sometimes it's spades, sometimes it's hearts. But it's still good enough because what it does is every time you play that heart, it automatically, immediately does a multiplier. And then I need to get something that repeats the multiplier because that's the most important part. You know, something that says, oh, let's do that card again. And then there's also other things like I'm seeing some of the unlocks. Like, to unlock a Joker card, I don't know what it does yet. All I know is you have to unlock it, is you have to get 5 glass cards, which I'm finding is incredibly difficult to do. Not only do you have to get the arcane deck to do it, but remember, you don't want to use those glass cards because 1 in 4 chance they'll destroy themselves.
So I roll the dice every time. I am actually the world's do you ever play with the Wheel of Fortune card,
Joe? Oh yeah, yeah. Sometimes.
How many times have you gotten it to work for you?
Like 10 times now.
I was on stream with that game and I used the Wheel of Fortune tarot card 13 times and it worked once.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be
1 in 7 chance my ass. That card
1 in 5. What are you talking about? Me. 1 in 5.
Whatever. That card hates me.
Oh,
that card is cruel.
So there's also for the Spectra cards, whatever.
The Wheel of Fortune card has convinced me that I might be the most unlucky person ever to play Bellatro.
So the Spectre cards that I need also to get is obviously the one that is the Ouija, which turns one card, you know, which turns 13 cards into a single value. I got it actually aces before, but it can be anything, because what I want is to be able to do flush fives.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you can make flush fives and keep doing flush fives over, you also have to get the telescope, which is the voucher that makes it whatever hand that you're doing the most, that planet will be available, right?
Nice.
So you keep on hitting that, and then there's something else that I need. But yeah, I mean, there's so many things that you want to contrive to get. So the thing is that there's a Joker that unlocks if you get 100 million. So that's my goal right now. Also, you get an achievement getting 100 million, but you also unlock a card for 100 million. So yeah, it's all about unlocking the Jokers right now.
There's a boss blind that I recently saw that my colleague discussed.
The arm, I hate it. Fucking hate it.
What's that?
The arm?
No, this one flips all your Jokers upside down and shuffles them.
Yeah, that's not as big a problem unless you have some multipliers.
No, that's what I was saying, is that might be the easiest looking blind I've ever seen, because the only way that would ever screw you is if your Joker setup was one of those ones where you're trying to keep a multiplier on the right. Like, that would mess things up. But
I got the one a few times. But I was ready for it. We always have to be ready for it. In which it says, every single card will be debuffed unless you kill a Joker. And I always have that one Joker that I can easily sacrifice. Say, okay, here, bye.
Yeah. I ran into that one with Jokers that I had no interest in sacrificing. And somehow I still managed to win I managed to win that one in one hand by doing something crazy. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head.
Well, you know, it's always love. When you have good – I forgot his name, Dr. Bones or something like that, and it's the final thing, you only need to get 10% of the thing, because even if you lose, you win. It says, I sacrificed myself. Boom, you win the boss blind. That's it. And that's how I won one of them. I only had half of it, but since I had Dr. Bones, it's like, well, guess what? You lost, but you won anyway. And that velvet – oh, my God. The velvet one is just a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But I've gotten most of the decks. Now I'm going after the, let's see, it's white, red, green, and the next that I'm going after. But yeah, I just, it's like, if I don't get the initial setup that I want after one ante, then I'm just saying, fuck it, I'm starting over, because it's not going the way I want. I need it this way, and I want it this way, period. And it's tough for me to decide if I want to do the Abandoned deck or the Checkerboard deck, because they're both pretty powerful. There's another deck, which is the Mystic deck, which I believe gives you the there's another one, actually, that gives you 3 slots, and it gives you 2 fools off the bat. And it gives you the Mystic voucher. And basically what that does is that if you get the deck you want, like the one the Hearts deck, right? The one that makes it the sun card. Well, then you just use it, and then you use a Joker, and boom, you have it, and then you use it again, then you use the Fool again, boom, you get to use the Sun deck three times. The Sun Arcane. There are so many ways to try and get a good good engine going.
You're right. There's so many different game plans you can do in that game, and there's so many game plans that can also be messed up just based on which boss blind you come up against at any given time. I've had runs that were going so damn well up until the point where I ran into the wrong boss blind, and it just
created my
core strategy.
Boss spawns. One is the one that halves your hand. That one's irritating as hell. But the one that really wants me to strangle someone is the arm. And they actually patched it. So what the arm does is it whatever you hand you did, oh, guess what? We're bumming that down a level permanently.
Yeah.
And it used to be that it would bump it down to level 0. They don't do that anymore. They took that away. I think people were complaining. I was really angry at that, having your things at level 0 worse than level 1. And it's hard, you know, it's hard to get the planet that you want to restore it, you know? First, you have to get the planet decks, and then you have to make sure the planet deck has the planet that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, my goal right now is aiming to do a flush 5 hearts thing and see how that goes. Because, like I said, the most I've gotten is 2.2. Oh, by the way, the challenges are fucking really hard.
Yeah.
The first one is the egg one, in which you're given 5 eggs and you never earn a penny, which means you have to save those eggs for the right moments. To cash them in. I'm not doing the challenges. Not for a long while. Getting all the things unlocked, that's a challenge. That's a challenge I'm going to deal with right now. Those challenges are for people who are experts at the game and they don't care. Although, here's funny, that today I got an engine going so early that the ante was 1,200 and the amount I made was 80,000. I wish they gave you extra money for surpassing it by that much.
Yeah. I haven't gone back to it in a little bit because I know it's coming to mobile now, and I think it's going to have a good chance of being like my mobile game of the year.
Oh, the one thing I was jealous of is I was on set for the movie I was doing, and this guy had a Switch and it was playing Blatro on it.
Yeah, I can't wait to have that game on a cell phone format because that's one that I'm going to probably take with me wherever I go and bust out around here and there.
Here's the thing. Hopefully, it'll actually either come to Game Pass, which I can see it happening because these little indie games, like 6 months later, one year later, these are the sort of things that creators will let go on Game Pass because they already made all the money they're going to make from it, from sales, and now they just get a check from Microsoft or Sony and say, okay, be on Game Pass. Or Microsoft has been hinting around that you'll be able to play the games that you have digitally on your cell phone, even if they're not Game Pass. And once that happens, I can play it on my cell phone too. So, but yeah, I still play Slay the Spire, but not as much with Balatro around.
Yeah, like Balatro is so simple, but it's like really it's so charming at the same time. The Jokers are charming, the art is charming, the style of the game is charming. It's just chill.
And I want to tell everybody listening, by the way, Balatro is $15, so I don't know why you haven't purchased it already.
And like, I think a part of that is like, there definitely is sort of like a solitaire or spider solitaire charm about it. It's a roguelike, and randomization can mess with you, but it still has that sort of like chill charm of old school.
Oh, there's nothing chill about this game. There's nothing chill about this game. When you get the wrong boss blind, it's like you want to murder somebody.
Yeah, that's true. But you always can. But that's one of the other things about it is that game is methodic, and you can see your demise coming from a mile away.
And that's one thing I have to remind myself to peek at the, because it allows you. There's two things I learned a little belatedly, but one, you can look and see what boss fight is coming up before they even show you the things, right? The other thing is that you can arrange your cards, and I say, wait, I can do that. I have this multiplier here on a 2, and I can just shove it in front of the ace so that the multiplier goes twice? Wow. You know, that sort of thing. It's like, I know the hardcore people at Bellatro already know this and are, like, laughing at me, but I didn't discover this until, like, 2 weeks ago. So it's sort of like, you know, I said, oh, I get it. Okay, I can do that. Or maybe I ignored part of the tutorial. I don't know. But yeah, now it's sort of like I am setting everything up because, by the way, otherwise the dagger would be completely irritating because it means you would kill every single noob thing you got. You know, yeah, just if you don't want to sacrifice, push it to the left, push it to the left, push it to the left.
Yeah. It's a blast. That game is fun.
Yeah.
Bellatro, play it.
Scott, are you going to play Bellatro or are you just going to play Tears of the Kingdom?
I'm going to be playing Aiden Chronicle when that comes out.
So am I, so there. By the way, I've completely stopped playing Starfield, but only because I'm waiting for two things. One, there are a lot of things that I'm, you know, new things that I'm playing, but also I'm waiting for Shattered Space, and I'm looking forward to that. You know, by the way, I figured out how Bethesda sort of fucked up with Starfield, and I know what they should have done. They should have, after you do that mind thing, you wake up on a planet far, far, far away from civilization, and you have to make your way back. That way you can, you'll see all of the procedural generated stuff and like that. And it'll be a victory just to get back to, not Earth, because Earth is toasted, New Centauri? Alpha, I know it's Alpha Centauri. But, you know, to get back to, you know, where Constellation is. I think that's what they should have done. They shouldn't have just started with your typical, oh, we're going to get to Constellation, blah, 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 blah. No, that's too fast. The strength of your game is the procedurally generated universe. Focus on that. Don't focus on you habited places. And don't focus on, you know, people you're not going to make it so that you're alone for a long while. I mean, that's what No Man's Sky did. I believe, you know, of course there was no, of course that was enforced because there were no civilized places for you to go at when you first played it. They had to add all that stuff later. But if they did the No Man's Sky of you being alone in a place and you had to figure your way out, well, Subnautica, you know, start the Subnautica opening, except when you leave, you're actually going someplace. So we already know what Shattered Space is going to be because of the plot. I'm not going to give it away just yet. It's not been a year, but yeah, So there's a game that's being heavily hyped right now. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen Starship Creator?
I have not.
It is going to, and what really shocks me is this game, which is on Kickstarter. It still has 2 weeks on Kickstarter. Starship Simulator, I'm sorry. It's a one-to-one scale galaxy, and you become a captain of a ship. And then other people can be the captain. And here's the thing. Say you choose to be an engineer. You only have to worry about the engineering stuff. The computer will be the captain. The computer will do everything else, the science and all that stuff. No, all you do is engineering, and that's your entire job. And you basically walk around the ship, and you have lunch and all that. You know, so it's sort of like being a job. If you're the starship captain, then you have to do all this. If you the science officer, there's even a mode in which you're just a rich passenger, and you do nothing on the ship. And the entire point of it, it's co-op PvE. It's basically Sea of Thieves, except in a starship, and PvE, which shocked me. Which absolutely shocked me that it's PvE. Because a game like this is PvP, right? No, this is PvE. And I'm really seriously going with the 125-pound backer, because then you get to design an alien species and design a planet and design. They give you so much stuff to do. So,
interesting.
Yeah, so go to YouTube and go to the Kickstarter for Starship Simulator, and this may be people's shit, you know. And the fact that it's PvE is sort of appealing, because I don't want to deal with griefers, really. You could be the starship captain. Your friend is the engineer. Your friend is another friend is the science officer. The other person is on comm and tactical, that sort of thing. And everybody has their own job, and you just worry about the job that you have. It was It was going for $82,000. I don't know what it is in euros. That's the thing. And they've already made $345,000. Oh, it just went up. The $345,260. So yeah, it looks really promising, and hopefully it does its goal. And like I said, it's basically taking Elite Dangerous to the next level.
Interesting.
Yeah, because
check it out.
Yeah. So anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Charter Moore.
Yeah, so this format was basically because there wasn't much news. I may start doing this format because we still got over an hour of stuff, you know. So right. We may go with a more loosey-goosey thing. I mean, I'll still have articles like the one with Gamers Seek Legal Win, but I think if us just talking might be more fun than just us reading articles.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
Yep. And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
That's that.